Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. WynnBET is now live in all these states, and the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas has finally landed in online sports betting and casino play. From boosted parlays to live in-game offs on every major sport, WynnBET gives you the tools to win. Sign up today for your risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Download the WynnBET app right now or visit WynnBET.com to start winning. All right, I am back. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Casual Friday on Talkin' Buffalo Podcast. I'm Patrick Moran. You can find me on Twitter at PatMoranTweets. And as always, for my Casual Friday, I got my good buddy, recurring guest, hockey writer, sports writer, my man Joe Yurden. What's going on, buddy?
What's happening, Pat? It's nice post-Thanksgiving weekend, I think.
It is.
Us doing the show so early last week kind of threw me, like,
it was weird.
Threw me off my head. Like, it was because we got done, like, you know, Thanksgiving got over with, and I was like, wow, I feel like I should be doing something today. What am I supposed to be doing? And it's like, no, we already did the show 2 days beforehand. So yeah, I was very much off kilter. So I'm back on schedule now, I think.
Casual Wednesday just didn't feel right, man. It didn't feel good to me.
Especially when, like, the Wednesday ahead of Thanksgiving is basically the, like, fall's version of St. Patrick's Day, you know, because I mean, I don't know if you went out or did anything Wednesday, but, like,
nope.
I ended up being out at some point on Wednesday night, and it was just like, geez, okay. Because I think I went out. Yeah, I went out with a couple friends to go watch the Sabres, and we went to We went to Good Bar on Elmwood, and it was a good thing we went. It was a good thing the game was at 7 o'clock, because if it was like a 10 o'clock start, there was zero chance of getting in there or getting in any place that would have had the game on.
You know what's funny? You get to be our age. If it's a night, like, say, the night before Thanksgiving, you want to get out early and, you know, just have a couple of drinks, watch a game or whatever. It's still the, as far as I know, it's the biggest bar night of the year. And I'm sure it turned into a cluster at some point.
Let me tell you, there was when we left Good Bar, now mind you, it was like, what, 9:30, 9:45, you know, just after the game got over with. We were like, we got to get out of here. It's going to get too crazy. We got to go. Let's go somewhere else where it's not going to be as busy. And we get outside. There's a line to get in Good Bar that went down the block almost to Forest Avenue. I was like, okay, I didn't know this. I didn't know it was going to be this busy here, but geez, okay. And then, like, at, like, you know, walking down Elmwood, you will pass Jackrabbit, which is brand new and it's hot. Same thing, line out the door. You know, we stopped by the Beer Keep, which is a great spot. It was busy in there. They had a DJ going for some reason. It was just loud. I was like, okay. I don't know. I'm like, me going out on Elmwood now is like, I feel very much like I'm the old guy because when there's like a DJ and there's people showing up to like dance and be seen and stuff. And I'm just like, oh man, I can't deal with this. Find me the quiet corner bar. I'm fine.
Are you team Kohl's or are you team Good Bar? Generally speaking. I've always thought that was a good competition. It always felt to me, at least when I was coming up anyway, because I grew up on the West Side. So those bars were right. They still are right next to each other.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, that was a comp. It was kind of like Coke and Pepsi or Burger King and McDonald's when I was a kid. Anyway, I was team Kohl's for the record.
Good Bar is so different now compared to the way it was, I guess, even before I even got to Buffalo, that it's kind of one and the same. Like the beer options at Good Bar are crazy good, because now it's like a craft beer bar almost, even though it's got all the, you know, the same old bells and whistles of, you know, that it used to. And Kohl's is still like the sweet neighborhood bar. You know, you can get food, you get wings and eat there. Like, that's great. And you can get all that stuff at Good Bar too. So it's really just like kind of whatever speed you're feeling at that day. You know, if you're feeling like a little bit like, let's tamp it down a little bit, let's go a little bit slower, Kohl's is probably the place. But if you're like, if you're thinking it's going to be a little bit rowdier of a night, I guess, or you want to be around more people, I think Good Bar is the play. But, like, honestly, I don't have a problem with either place. They're both good.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I am team which bar is not as crowded when I go somewhere. Yes. And I'm team happy hours and early evening as opposed to staying out past midnight, which is funny. Yeah, when I was coming up, man, I was definitely team Kohl's. I got rejected in that bar many times, college years. You know, I wasn't even going to college. And I hooked up once or twice. You know, I kind of always every main loyal to Kohl's. But yeah, man, I love that. I love that area. But I don't know about this time of year, dude, when it's cold. That's a great... Elmwood is awesome to go sit out and have a couple drinks and just people watch. Whether it's Cold's Good Bar or any of those bars up and down this strip, not necessarily even like that Elmwood and Bird area, just all the way up and down Elmwood. I love Elmwood, but I like it when it's nice out and people are out and about walking around. Oh, they still kind of are right now, aren't they?
Yeah.
Some jackets and shit.
Yeah. I think that stretch is going to get a little weirder now that they built condos across the street from Good Bar and Cold's.
Yeah, that's like, right.
It looks so weird now because I, I'm not a lifer in Buffalo. So I'm, you know, it wasn't painted in my mind forever, but just the old houses that the old buildings that were across the street from there, and they just tore them all down to build friggin' condos, which I'm thinking, who's going to spend that much money to live across the street from Good Bar and Kohl's? Because I don't know, man, seems like a weird move to me. Plus that intersection, Forest and Elmwood, is constantly busy.
It's always been that way.
So I don't know, man. Like, if you're spending a ton of money to live there, like, hey, cool. I'm sure the places are gonna be really nice. But also, you're living across the street from like two of the really busier bars in the city.
Sure. Yeah. You know what? I got to warn you about something too. Before we're gonna talk Bills, Sabres, like, you know, we're gonna have our starting five draft. And speaking of that, next week, I'm warning you now, a week ahead of time.
Okay.
I'm gonna crush you with our draft. So for I think what we're going to do this month, because it is December, we're going to have some sort of Christmas theme starting five draft every month. If there's anyone out there listening who's new to this podcast, every Friday, Joe and I do a starting five. We draft five of whatever. And usually it's musical stuff, you know, movies, TV, all kinds of pop culture stuff. But we're going to do Christmas stuff. Like today, later on today, we're going to do Christmas songs. And then next week, we're going to do Christmas movies. And I'm warning you now because that's all I've been doing all week, watching Christmas movies. I have going into this season, and I had a conversation with Aaron Quinn from Cover One, which kind of changed everything. I'm not a Christmas movie guy. Like I've seen a lot of the classics or the most popular mainstream ones, but I haven't watched a lot of Christmas movies. So I decided I'm going to be a complete social outcast this entire month and do nothing but watch movies. I started this on Monday. You and I are taping this like around lunchtime here on Thursday. I've already watched 11 movies, Christmas movies. That I've never previously seen. And I don't want to give you, I don't want to get into detail on how I feel about them. Although if you follow me on Twitter, you'll know. But yeah, I've watched The Santa Claus 1 and 2. I've watched Christmas Chronicles 1 and 2. I've watched Claus. I watched The Ref. I watched Four Christmases. I watched The Night Before. There's a new one on HBO Max called 8-Bit Christmas that I just watched, The Holiday. So my game's going to be strong, bro. I'm going to be well-informed, and I don't know who I'm going to pick yet, but because it's tough to only draft five. I'm telling you right now, my Christmas movie knowledge is going to be through the roof by the time we get together for this next week.
Let me just say that if you keep tipping your hand on Twitter with the movies that you really like, I'm going to have you well scouted.
I'm an attention whore, Joe. I can't help myself.
Listen, you don't have to tell me about being an attention whore. Like, listen, I'm glad Twitter took away the ability to see how many tweets you've actually made. And because it's been a lot over the last, I don't know how long I've been on this stupid website, 12 years. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, me too.
Like Christmas movies, I have my favorites and I tend to stick to that. And the schmaltziness of Christmas movies tends to like wear me out. And that's probably me being more of a Scrooge than anything, but.
I've been that way, Joe. I've changed my ways though this year. I'm more open. I've opened my heart and my mind to the wonderful world of Christmas movies. I will say this, jokes aside, I can't believe how many Christmas movies there are. I always felt like there was like 10 or 15 Christmas movies. There's like, goddamn, it's going to be probably a couple hundred. I'm never obviously going to watch all of them, but dude, you can watch 2-3 movies a day for the entire month and you still are probably only going to see like half of the movies that people are talking about.
Mm-hmm. Eh, yeah. Whatever. And it's just like, hell, the Hallmark Channel alone is responsible for at least like 50 of them.
I'm pretty sure. I could do the Hallmark Channel. I suppose at some point I'm going to have to, if I want to, you know, to continue, because I feel like I'm going to watch all the mainstream ones by at this rate anyway, by Christmas. But yeah, the Hallmark ones, there's a ton of them on Netflix too that, you know.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of new ones. So every time you think you're going to catch up, there's always going to be a whole pile of new ones that come out. But it is fun. I mean, I have enjoyed it. I mean, I'm just sitting home all week, literally. And by the way, I'm not a loser. Everyone out there who's, you know, like, do watch Christmas movies. I am technically working, you know, I have a regular job during the day and I work from home, and my boss, you know, he doesn't really check up. This is the work you got to do, get it done. And I do. But instead of like listening to music or shit, I have a TV in my like home office, and I watch movies all day, man. That's what I do.
I mean, listen, there's worse things to have in life. Like, yeah, I mean, geez, I mean, if your thing is sitting around watching movies, bummer. What a terrible life that is. My goodness. I mean, listen, I've been the guy that's been sitting around watching that Beatles documentary on Disney Plus. So I
watched some of the first one, by the way. Have you liked it?
It's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. And like, I'm not a Beatles obsessive person, but like, I mean, come on, it's the friggin' Beatles. Like, you have to have like at least some basic knowledge of the band, and which, I mean, music guy, like I tend to think that I know some things about the band already, but you're learning, even me as like a middle of the road kind of casual Beatles fan, learning so much stuff about it and seeing how the guys interact is fascinating, because you think like a band by that point in their career, where, you know, they've already had their drug years, their, John Lennon's still kind of in his drug years while that's being shot. And it's fascinating to see how, like, even after all that time, like even when they're going through some really hard stuff, they're still just kind of cool with each other and everybody's fine. And I'm just like, man, this is not dramatic at all. Like, and it's really interesting to watch and to see the dynamic and the personalities. And like, you kind of understand the personalities already, given how, you know, each guy's been portrayed through the years. But yeah, it's cool as hell, man. And like, to see the song creation process go, as you know, as it happens with them, is just something else. It's incredible. It's incredible to watch. And I'm just like, oh, these guys, their brains are just wired in a completely different way to be able to pull this stuff off.
I was, you know what? Well, maybe I'm wrong then, because I watched there's three parts, and I guess the total is like, what, like almost between like 7 and 8 hours between the three.
Yeah, it's like eight parts. Hours.
The first part is like 2 hours and 35 minutes or something like that. And my take was, and I think you just kind of proved me wrong here, I was going to say the only kind of people that would enjoy this documentary, because of the length of it and because it is fascinating, I agree with everything you said from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. But my take was, you have to really, really, really like this band a lot to sit through what basically is just them, a lot of the documentary, just sitting around coming up with songs or talking or whatever. I mean, like, you almost got to be like borderline obsessed with the band, but that's not true. Obviously you're proving me wrong right now, because you said you're kind of a middle of the road Beatles fan.
Yeah. But I'm also like a bit of a music dork too. Like, you know, doing radio for all these years, and, you know, college radio and stuff like that, where you're just like obsessed and swamped over with music constantly. So like, even if you're just like a casual fan of the Beatles, it's really like, I don't know. For me, it's interesting. For some people, it just might be like, oh my God, 2 hours of these guys sitting around, dicking around on the guitar and like playing, messing around, and Ringo kind of looking like he's bored, waiting for everybody else to figure out the songs and everything. Like, you're just kind of like, I will say, I don't think it's for everybody, but I think if you, depending on the frame of mind that you go into watching it, I think it's really interesting.
Yeah. See, maybe I was in the wrong frame of mind when I started watching it, because to be honest with you, man, I was laying in bed. I put it on and I was kind of messing around on my phone and on Twitter,
right away,
messing around with TikTok a little bit. I will say, so I was bored, but I will say this. I did catch parts where they were coming up with a couple songs. And again, I only watched some, I'd say a little more than half of the first part. I didn't watch any of 2 and 3, but it was pretty cool to see them starting to come up with verses and stuff. I know Let It Be was one, and Get Back. I don't know if Let It Be was one. I can't remember. I think it might have been, but definitely Get Back was definitely one song in the first part that they went through the process of coming up with.
McCartney,
that was cool, man.
He basically pulled it out of the ether. Like, it's just like, it was him and George and Ringo just kind of sitting around, and then Paul's like kind of noodling with the guitar, and then he's kind of putting words together, and then suddenly he's just kind of like, all right, and he starts going, get back, and he's like, starts doing it, and he's playing it on the bass, and then Harrison just kind of perks up and he goes, oh, you got something. Okay, we got something now. And it was just like out of nowhere, suddenly there's a gigantic hit song. And you're like, okay, cool.
Yeah, watching the creation process of a song when you're probably the most iconic band that's ever existed is, you know, that part was cool. I will probably give it a watch. And in fairness, I probably shouldn't be messing around on Twitter or my phone and looking at TikTok videos when I'm watching it. It does seem like the kind of thing that if you're going to watch it, like you need to actually absorb it and watch it. But anyway, yeah, that was cool. Like I said, next week we're going to do Christmas movies. Today we're doing Christmas songs. For that though, let's start with the Sabres instead of the Bills. All right, I have to interrupt this podcast real quick right here at this very point, and for good reason. What you've heard up until now and what you'll hear after this is a podcast recording that Joe Yurden and I did roughly around lunchtime on Thursday. And if you do podcasts or if you listen to them, depending on when they're recorded, you'll know one of the biggest pitfalls of recording something the day before is that so much could happen after you're done recording. Joe and I spent a good 15 minutes of this podcast talking about the Buffalo Sabres goaltending, how lousy it's been, and that they need to make a move, and they need to make one now. Didn't know any names, but we spent a lot of time talking about that. And then we also spent time talking about their top prospect goaltender, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, who's been very up and down in Rochester. And we talked about how it would be a good idea to keep him in Rochester, let him get as many games, let him get as many minutes as possible. That was our initial recording, again, Thursday, around lunchtime. Well, as fate has it, not 15 minutes after we were done recording, the Sabres make a trade for a goaltender. They go out to get Malcolm Subban from Chicago. Not really much to him. Kind of falls in line with the other goalies that they got right now up here in Buffalo. But anyway, so they make a trade for a goalie. And then, like, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes after that, the Sabres promoted UPL to Buffalo because Dustin Tatarski went on the COVID list. Again, these were things that happened after we were done recording, literally right after we were done recording. So we didn't talk about it. And because we spent so much time talking about goaltending stuff, that now doesn't matter because they've made these moves. I decided just to nix that part. So that's why I interrupted this here. I'm going to get you right back to the podcast. When it resumes, Joe starts talking about Tage Thompson, Owen Power, and then the rest of the podcast is stuff that we recorded yesterday. So just want to let you know that. And on that note, right back to the podcast. Here we go. They give up a lot of goals. It's not necessarily always the goaltending. Sometimes the forwards aren't playing well, or sometimes the defense isn't playing well. You wrote about in Die by the Blade. In fact, that just dropped today as we taped this. I believe it dropped this morning, Thursday. It's totally okay for fans to be excited about the imminent arrival of Owen Power. Elaborate on the column that you wrote for Die by the Blade a little bit.
Well, I dug into what Power's done this season for Michigan. And Michigan's like a super team. I mean, I know there's not a lot of people watching college hockey like that. It's not happening. But they can basically field almost two lines full of guys who were number one picks or like first round picks. It's just an unbelievable amount of talent. I think they had five first rounders taken in this past draft, Power being one of them. It's a stupid amount of talent. So it's a loaded team, but even still, Power's second in the country in scoring as a defenseman. He's the leading scoring defenseman by 7 points over anybody. He's got three goals, 20 assists, I think it is. I'm trying to remember this off the top of my head. And he's got a lot of points in the power play. I think it's like 12 points in the power play. But he's, you know, when you're getting half your scoring in the power play, half at 5-on-5, awfully good. And the defensemen in the past who've scored at this kind of rate, Cale Makar is a big one, because when he was at UMass a few years ago, when he came through here and lost the national title game, he was with UMass against UMD. He had like an all-time season. He scored like 16 goals or something that year for UMass. He was incredible. And, you know, it's guys like him. You know, Charlie McAvoy was another guy who had, you know, not as big stats you know, scoring wise, but like as soon as he left BU and went to the Bruins, he was a monster player for them. And even a guy like I originally had him mentioned in the story that I took him out to mention McAvoy, but Scott Perunovich is another one who won a Hobie Baker, who put up giant numbers as a junior at UMD. And like guys that do this as defensemen, like Power is, are rare in college hockey. Like we've seen it more lately, but guys that can put up points like this and play in a dominating sort of way like this are extremely rare. And I said, you know, my bold prediction was that he was going to be a Hobie Baker finalist. If he doesn't win it this year, I'll be shocked. And he's damn good. He's unbelievably good. And I know it was, you know, people were just like, well, he's not as high, right? You know, he's not as like overwhelmingly number one as guys like, you know, as like Dahlin was, or, you know, Jack Hughes was, or, you know, any of these other guys that went number one. He's rounded into a form where it's like, okay, this guy's dynamite. And he's a big kid too. He's 6'6", like 6'6" defenseman, not a thunderous hitter, but like, are you going to run up against a guy who's 6'6", like on defense? Are you looking to skate into a guy that's that big? Like, no, of course not. So I'm, as this season goes on, and Michigan's going to be, they should go deep into the tournament. If they don't, it's a huge surprise. But Michigan's worth watching. If you have access to the Big Ten Network, Friday, Saturdays, or Sundays, watching some Michigan hockey is not the worst idea, because Michigan's fun to watch, but Power's on the ice constantly. And, you know,
there's a Sabres goalie on that team.
Yeah,
as
Eric
well.
Portillo. Yeah, he's their starting goalie there this year. And like he's gotten kind of downplayed because he has this, you know, super team in front of him. So, but even still, Portillo's playing really well. So he's, and you know what? Him and Power are probably both going to sign here after this year. I'm less confident on that with Portillo. I would bet, if I owned a house, I would bet the house on Power coming and signing with Buffalo after Michigan season's over. But I think in Portillo's case, maybe not quite as much, but he could. And I think if he doesn't sign with Buffalo after this year, it's time to get a little nervous, like the Colin Peterson kind of nervous, where you're just kind of like, or right. Calvin Peterson, you're just kind of like, okay, like, is he actually going to come here, or is he going to like burn out his eligibility? Because that becomes an open possibility if he doesn't sign after this year. But I got to believe he's going to.
You know, you talk about a goaltender, and I'm going to backtrack a little bit because I should have asked you this before. How long could the Sabres go? If UPL is not ready, okay? I don't know when Anderson's coming back, but let's just say they determine, and they're not rushing these kids in Rochester right now.
Yep.
Let's just say UPL, who, from what I understand, I haven't watched, but I read, you know, and I follow a lot of you guys who cover hockey. He's been up and down in Rochester. Mm-hmm. He's had some good moments, and he's had some really shitty games too. Let's just assume he's not ready right now. How long can the Sabres go on not making any move at goaltending and just rolling out Tatarski every night, or God forbid Dell? And I know eventually Anderson will be back, eventually, whenever. But do they got to make some move at goaltending? Now, look, I know they're not going anywhere in the standings. They're not making the playoffs. But, I mean, you also don't want your team going out there playing their asses off, playing their hearts out every night, and then they lose 6-5 because the goalie can't stop a fucking puck. At some point, right. you got to make a save. You know, the quote Mike Harrington, make a save. He's right. I mean, you got to have respectable goaltending, or it might start to affect the morale of the team, or you know, something like that. How long can they go on before they like make some kind of move?
Not much longer, I would say. The way Tokarski's gotten lit up the last few times out, the way Dell has not provided any sort of help in relieving that. If Tokarski has a bad night, you can say like, well, at least Dell can step in there, you know, clean up the mess, and then maybe get another start or two. That hasn't worked out that way. They're close to a point where a lot of those really strong effort games are not necessarily going to waste, but like from the confidence perspective, where like guys are going all out, you got to kind of save that at some point.
Sure.
And if the goalies aren't able to back that up and get it done, that's not great either. Like, I mean, you can take your lumps because, this team's going to have some of those nights where they're going to get knocked around, and like, that's how it goes. But you can't have your goaltending be the source of problems every time out. Like, that cannot be the way. Now, I think that's why everybody got geeked up when Ottawa waived Matt Murray recently, and they were just like, oh, they got to claim him. I was like, well, he's owed $15 million after this year. Like, I don't think they're claiming him, especially because he's been bad in Ottawa. Like, it's been a whole bunch of issues there. Like, Ottawa, not a good team. You know, Murray had COVID last year, I think it was. He's had some trouble, recovering from that, at least struggling with it, energy and whatnot.
Sure.
So, I mean, there's issues there, but it costs so much money, and like, it's the raw cost. Who cares about the cap hit? Like, Sabres are so below the cap, it doesn't matter. Like, they're barely above the floor, for crying out loud. Like, taking on a $6.5 million cap hit on a goalie, not a big deal. But with what we know about the owners, that he's owed like $15 million after this year, and probably another, $3 million this year. Like, you're going to pay. You think Terry's itching to pay a goalie $18 million after like trying to scrimp and save, the last couple of years and trying to get around with Ullmark and these guys? Uh-uh. Not a chance. So, but I think, I think Elliot Friedman mentioned that Buffalo has interest, but like, Ottawa's got to eat half that money. Which, hey, I think that's only right, considering Murray's at his lowest value possible, and if they're desperate to move on from him, hey man, like, you got to eat half that money, and like, that'll, maybe we won't ask you for a first round pick then. Like, maybe it's just a second round pick to do it, like, that's the price of doing business there. But yeah, when it comes to UPL, I think if UPL was another year along and there wasn't his development years hadn't got kind of fudged around the last couple of years because of COVID and everything, he would certainly have gotten a call by now. I have to believe it. But the fact is that they got to get him right in Rochester first. They got to get him the reps, and they got to get him the games, and they got to figure out, what's making him tick and what makes him go. Because if they don't get him figured out, they don't have a goalie pipeline, really, because then you're waiting another year or two on Portillo. And then, Devin Levi in Northeastern, like, that's another, year or two maybe after him. So, like, you don't want to have your pipeline broken, for another couple more years. Like, that does them no good. But you got to know what you got in UPL. And I think the games that he's looked outstanding are like, you're like, wow, that's the guy. That's the guy we need. But then there's other games where, he's given up like four goals on 15 shots. And you're like, what the hell, man? Like what the hell? What guy do we have, night in, night out here? So if I think UPL was a little bit more solidified and he was owning it every game, and like some of those, it was a little bit more consistent, I think he'd be up already. As it is, he might still come up anyways, because things have been that bad with Dell and to a certain and another level Tokarski.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's take a really quick break. And on the other side, I got a couple more Sabres things that I want to hit on. We'll spend a few minutes talking about the big Bills-Patriots game coming up next Monday. And then again, we'll finish with our starting five draft. This week is going to be Christmas songs. Be right back.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, I'm back with Joe Yurden. Now, you wrote on your Noted Hockey Substack, which, by the way, I'll put a link to that. If you have not yet subscribed to that, obviously, go ahead. Joe does great work. He's putting out some really good content with that. But anyway, you had questions recently with a guy named Jack Han, and among them was Tage Thompson, who's just continuing to play really good. For those listening who don't know who Jack Han is, tell us a little bit about that guy, and then tell us a little bit about what was revealed in the post that you wrote for your Noted Hockey.
Well, Jack is Jack's an absolute hockey whiz. Like, he's a very smart, brilliant guy. He's written a handful of books on hockey tactics, breaking down, you know, why teams do what they're doing. You know, like how guys are working off each other, how, like, you know, different power plays work out. You know, what makes them tick, you know, things like that, breaking down what makes some of these NHL teams go and how some of these players operate. Like, it's fascinating. He at one point was an assistant coach of the Toronto Marlies. I mean, he's a young dude. Like, he's probably a little bit younger than I am. And I got to know him years ago when he was writing for the Montreal Canadiens. So he's a guy I've known for a bit, and he's done some great stuff with his hockey tactics books, his ebooks. Fantastic stuff. I cannot recommend reading them enough, just to, like, broaden your mind and become more of a dork about hockey. Like, that's the way it is for me. But when it comes to some of the stuff on the ice, and, like, listen, I know my boundaries when it comes to like expressing my, I don't know, I don't want to call it expertise, but my knowledge on the game, I have my limits. And when it comes to breaking down, like, you know, the one of the biggest questions I've been fielding all year is, like, how is Tage Thompson doing this? How does he go from being, like, this kind of nothing dude who's not putting anything together to being probably the best scorer on the Sabres and looking like, you know, not by default either. Like, it's by his own true merits. So, you know, so I buzzed this question off of Jack, and the way he was able to break it down for us was that the situation that he's in now with Buffalo is so much more favorable for him and how he plays, because the way he was used before as a winger, and, you know, the thought that he was going to be a power forward didn't work. I mean, it's very obvious now that it didn't work. But he's not that kind of player. Thompson's like 6'6", 6'7" now, which is crazy. It's crazy. He's legit 6'7" too. Like, I talk with Tage enough to know that me at 6'2" is looking up at him going, geez, okay, man, you're all right. But he's got such great hands, and he's got such mobility that he's a different kind of large size player. Like, He's able to do a lot of things that smaller forwards do. And when he does that, it Jack broke it down saying, like, that's tougher for a guy to do along the wall, do it along the boards, because he can only do so many things there. So putting him in the middle, you know, which is a position he hasn't really played a ton at before, puts him in a spot where he can do a lot more of these things and be able to do it to his advantage. So it's fascinating to have that kind of breakdown in figuring out, like, what makes a guy go. Because, I mean, sometimes you just watch games, like, oh, he's doing better things, he's doing cooler things. Like, yeah, I mean, hey, like, listen, I'm guilty of breaking things down like that myself too. But having him break down Tage that way was really interesting to read about, and made me happy that I reached out to him to ask him about it too. Because, you know, Jack's tweeted about him a few times this year. He's written a couple of, like, a different things on his Substack. I think it's the Hockey Tactics newsletter, if I'm remembering correctly. But but he breaks down a lot of these little things out now and again. And it's just like, wow, okay, this is really cool. This is really cool to see and really cool to look at and how it works. But yeah, it's really interesting to watch. I try to not give away everything with what I was saying there. Please do go visit notedhockey.substack.com to read it. But yeah, it's, but yeah, with what Tage is doing, it's really, it's a real, I don't want to say it's an unexpected development, but it kind of is, because I don't know what we really knew. We certainly didn't know that he had this kind of ability in him already, but this is a very pleasant development, because they went from being a team where center was like, I don't know, maybe Casey's got to kind of hold up everything here. And then Dylan Cousins got to fall in a line. But now it's that, now they're like, oh, we got Casey, we've got Dylan Cousins, we got Tage Thompson. Neat. We have center depth finally. Like it's such a huge switch for them, because wingers, you can make a center a winger easy, but making a winger a center, a lot more difficult. And the fact that it's worked for Tage is pretty impressive.
Sure. And that's not even to mention Payne and Krabs, who eventually at some point
right.
will be up. So the center depth, yeah, it's definitely looking up. You know, I'd be remiss. One last Sabres thing, too. I'd be remiss you mentioned his name if I didn't bring this up. You know, you go back to the end of last season, and Tage Thompson was one of those handful of guys that kind of gave you optimism going forward. Another one was Casey Mittelstadt, who really turned it around. Got mm-hmm. hurt first game, hasn't been back since. But he is back. Again, we're taping this Thursday afternoon. He'll be back tonight, obviously. We'll have to wait till next week till we can kind of, you know, talk about how he looks right now. But just his presence back in this lineup is a big deal, man. It's a big deal. Now he's skating with, I saw the lines, he's going to be skating with Asplund and Gerges. What are your thoughts on that? And I mean, it's not like they have a ton of scoring options. That Tage Thompson, Skinner, Olofsson line, they're staying together. So I wouldn't touch them either. And Cousins and Okposo and Murray have looked pretty good. So, I mean, it feels mm-hmm. like for now, at least anyway, feels like a good fit for Casey to begin, right?
Yeah, he's got a couple of guys that really dig in hard. I mean, anybody who's, you know, I don't know if I'm doing like the, I don't know if I'm doing like the verbal version of the Steph Curry, like somebody told me Steph Curry couldn't shoot tweet, but like, you know, anybody who's ever questioned Zemgus Girgensons like ability to just play hard hockey and just to be like a dig in dude, like that's craziness, because he's always been one of the hardest workers out there, which I know gets, you know, can get people rolling their eyes here, especially when you start calling it blue collar hockey or something like that. I roll my eyes just now saying that because I hate the idea of it. But like that's Girgensons' game. Like he's full on press, like get in your face, defend everything, just be a physical guy. Asplund's kind of the same way, but like not as physical. Where he's, you know, straight line dog on a puck, you know, dog on a bone kind of guy with the puck, is always around the net and able to do that. So like those guys are kind of the doing the grunt work, while Mittelstadt can do more of the offensive work, where he's going to generate shots and be able to slip passes to these guys. So I think it makes sense in my mind right now. And obviously, it'll be a little bit fluid for him, you know, coming back in, but. But that's a group that makes sense to me, because you know exactly what you're going to get from Girgensons. You pretty much know what you're going to get from Asplund, and Asplund's scoring has cooled off a little bit here lately. So maybe you're thinking Asplund's going to get maybe a little bit of a boost having Casey with him, but it works. Like the flash and dash this team has had before with Eichel and Reinhardt and those guys is kind of gone, but like these guys can produce, like they can do things well, especially in this system, the way Granato's got them playing, man. They can do things much more effectively than they have in the past. We're almost at a point now where like anything that we've learned about these guys in the previous years, you might as well just forget about it, because it's completely different now with the way they play and the way these guys are kind of juiced up about it. So it's, I'm going to be eager to see it, because the way Casey played in preseason and everything, I was like, all right, maybe something can happen here. Let's see what happens. But you know, you get injured in the first game, it sucks. it's such a letdown. So we'll see what he can do. I'm going to be very interested to see how it plays out, because I think there is a little bit of pressure on him, just because of, you know, the way it is right now. And certainly now that they added Peyton Krebs to the mix, it's like, okay, well, Casey, if you want to be a top six guy, you better like, let's get it done, man. Let's do this, because not only are those guys, you know, him and you know, Krebs and Cousins in line for it, Thompson's basically your number one guy. So we'll see. Having lots of really good centers is not a problem. it might be a problem for ice time and trying to figure things out that way, but it is not a problem for any coach, because if you can have your center position solidified, whoo, that's such a break. That is such a weight off of the shoulders of a coach, because then because then you can play with the wingers however you want. But if you got your center straight, man, that's great.
I'm excited about KC returning. Not as excited as I am about next Monday, though, because, look, there's no way around it. It's a huge game. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Well, yeah, I do know. It is the biggest game of the year. Originally, you know, I thought beating Kansas City was going to be the biggest game, the biggest moment of the year because, and we've talked about this before, I thought that they had to beat the Chiefs. Not just for the standings, not just to get mm-hmm. the W in the win column, but I think mentally to be able to get over the hump, they had to know that they could beat the Kansas City Chiefs if they end up playing them in the playoffs. Had they went to Kansas City and gotten smacked after playing two shitty games against them last year, I think that might have stuck around. So I thought that was the biggest game, but not anymore. I mean, this game on Monday night is the biggest game of the year. It's certainly the most meaningful game of the year. It's certainly going to be the most impactful game of the year. Mm-hmm. It's literally for first place in the AFC East. And now everybody notices, you know, I am going to pat myself on the back. I told you this shit like 3-4 weeks ago, man. Don't sleep on the Patriots. This is a very good football team. They play well. The offensive line is good. They run the ball. They have, I would call it a conservative passing game, but hey, it works. And they play hella defense, man. They're really good, and I don't even need to tell you how well they're coached. I do think the Bills are the better team still. And even without Trey White, I still think the Bills are the better football team. 1-53, I think the Bills are the better team. I think they're more talented. They're at home. It's prime time, and it's a big game. So there's lots of things going the Bills' way. But if you just think this team's going to come in and just, you know, lay down to the Buffalo Bills, it ain't happening. This is going to be a good game, and this is an important game. Like, what are your thoughts going into this? Because New England's been not one of them. New England's been the hottest team in the NFL now for the last, 5 weeks?
Yeah. There's a lot of things about the Patriots that give me reason to pause when it comes to the Bills. Like, they have a conservative passing game because they can run the ball.
Yeah.
Which we've seen is a problem for the Bills. The Bills defense, they struggled handling teams that can run. I know it's pretty commonplace to see Bills fans kind of dunking on how Mac Jones has played, but also, do you need to be a super duper level passer if you're run games pulling chunks of yards off? Like, no.
Nope.
You can get your yards then because suddenly the play action's a very effective weapon and you can go from there. Now, this is where I think any lessons they learned in the Tennessee game come back to help out Buffalo here. But I admit I haven't watched a ton of the Patriots this year. I mean, obviously we're not going to see a whole ton of them here, but watching them play against Atlanta though, the guy I kept seeing constantly on the defensive side of the ball was Jeudon. And this dude is a freak. He's got like what, 11 and a half sacks already, like 11 and a half, 12 sacks, like Jesus. And I just keep thinking like, boy, if the line ain't got their head on straight Monday night, you're going to see a lot of him chasing Josh Allen all over the place. Cause holy crap, man. He's impressive. It's so weird to be saying this about New England because of how bad they were last year. Listen, we know the reasons why. It was first year without Brady. You know, half their defensive starters all sat out because of COVID.
Yeah, like, big deal.
Yeah,
I might be sarcastic. It was a big deal.
Oh yeah, but half the good players in the roster basically got a year off because they were just like, oh, forget this. We ain't gonna deal with this. But they got basically the great defense they had 2 years ago basically came back, and they added guys to it, and now it's like, oh well, here's why they're really good. The defense is great. Like, they don't really have you don't have a superstar guy back there. When they had Stephon Gilmore, it was like, okay, well, I guess he's the star, but he ain't there now. So, you know, like, what are they doing? It's almost like a no-name defense, except Jeudon has been so much in the backfield that he's the star, man. Like if you ain't paying attention to him, like if they don't have him marked up every time they come to the line, they're going to be in for that. The offense is going to be in for a hard night. Because that defense is very difficult. And, you know, listen, the Bills offense has been
up and down.
It was weird. You know, it's weird they beat New Orleans 31-6 and you're just kind of left going like, I don't know. It wasn't that great. Like, you know, you're not sitting there going like, wow, oh, the Bills are back. You're like, you're not doing that. You're just kind of like, no, they got to win, so that's good. But, you know, Allen wasn't really going off. Like, you know, I mean, you know, I would have been great to see him like throw for like 400 yards and just, you know, just make it look effortless. Like, that would be great. But I don't know, man. Like, obviously I'm not a Bills fan, and I'm kind of a natural pessimist going into these things, but it's a lot of bad juju for me, like looking ahead into this game, because I'm just like, I don't know, man. Like, it's a huge game. Yeah, Bills got to win it because they got to get back on top of the division. But I don't know. Like, when you set that, like, that opening line got set at what, Bills giving 3, like, that's the standard line for a home team. Home team laying 3 points is the standard line. So it basically said, tells me they think it's a pick 'em line. And I'm like, okay, all right. Like, this is kind of normal. Like, this is what they're looking at it as. So I don't know. Like, I don't know. There's a lot that doesn't sit right with me about this matchup.
I guarantee you on Sunday and Monday, when all these experts are picking, you'll probably see close to a 50-50 split. I think you're going to get a lot of people mm-hmm. picking the Patriots. Let me say this too about Mac Jones. If I'm bothered, he's getting anointed already, and that shit annoys me. Like, I'm a sucker, and the one thing I have done besides watch Christmas movies all week is as I continuously put on ESPN in the morning, just because I'm a fucking glutton for punishment and an idiot. And all the it may as well be called the New England Patriots channel, because they spend literally, and the other half's the Dallas Cowboys, by the way, but they spend half their broadcast, all the shows too, talking about the mm-hmm. Patriots. And it's Mac Jones this, Mac Jones that. Look, Mac Jones is all right. He might turn into be a star in future years. He's okay right now. I think he's a great fit for the Patriots. No mm-hmm. question about it. But yeah, it's this defense. And I'll tell you this, man. They deserve the praise they're getting, because they're very much for real. Now, you could say, sure, if Josh Allen doesn't slip, the Bills beat the Titans. All right, mm-hmm. they got their asses kicked by the Colts. They didn't deserve to win the Jacksonville game. I don't care if they should have beat Jacksonville. Yeah, mm-hmm. every shitty team should beat every good team should beat every shitty team. It doesn't happen. The Bills didn't deserve to win that game. They got their asses handed to them by the Colts, and they lost to the Steelers. You look at the Patriots, they're 8-4, and I'm telling you right now, I've watched these games, dude. They lost to Dallas in overtime, where mm-hmm. Dallas needed like a 53-yard field goal or something to send it to overtime, and they got a lucky call, too. The Patriots should have won that game. Opening week, they lost to Miami by 1 point. It was a red zone fumble by Damian Harris. They were going to beat Miami mm-hmm. very easily right now. New England could be 10-2. And then they lost by 2 points. Now, I'm not saying they should have won the game, but they only lost by 2 to Tampa on Sunday mm-hmm. Night Football. So this team is good. And they've beaten some pretty good teams, too. It's not like they've played they have played the Jets twice. But, you know, they smacked Tennessee. Now, they're down a lot of guys, but they smacked them. They beat up on Cleveland. They beat Carolina on the road when Carolina was okay. They beat the Chargers on the road. Mm-hmm. They're a good football team. Now, I'll say this for the Bills, for optimism, losing Trey White sucks, all right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's one of the best mm-hmm. players on the team. He's one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. You can't deny that ultimately, in the long run, is going to be a detriment to this team. But for the purpose of this one specific game, and you look at this team right now going into Monday night, as opposed to last Thursday when they were playing the Saints, I think the Bills are actually better off than they were going into Thursday's game. And I say that because, yes, you lost a Pro Bowl corner in Trey White, but you're getting Spencer Brown back, and you're getting Starla Tutule back, and you're probably getting John Feliciano back. So the offensive line will be where they want it to be, and the defensive line will be where they want it to be. And again, stopping the run for New England is going to be a big deal. So I would say the Bills are actually, for this one specific game, plus the Patriots don't have any great wide receivers. Like, I'm not sold at all on Dane Jackson being the second corner now, and I'm not sold on Levi Wallace having to be the number one corner. Although he's played mm-hmm. well this year, I will give him that. But that might get them down the road. But for this game, and it's all about winning the division first and foremost, I think the Bills are in better shape going into this game than they were going into the Saints game.
Yeah, you mentioned the receivers for New England, and anytime, and going back into the Brady years, anytime they had a receiver that you're just like, oh crap, they got this guy. It was weird. Like Randy Moss, the one time, you know, Deion Branch was always really good, but like, I don't know. They didn't, having a superstar receiver has never been their thing. They've always been like, you know, spread it out and you know, death by a thousand cuts. Right. That's kind of how it goes. And having 900 tight ends who can catch the ball, like that's always been how they've worked. So I think you're right, because not having White may not hurt them as much in this game. Whereas if they see Kansas City again down the road, that's not, I don't like that setup at all. Yeah. But
and
like,
by the way, hold on, Joe. So we're clear. Joe and I both are, the Bills are better with Trey White than they are without them. Just so we're being clear. But you're saying that you think they can get by this game without a Trey White.
They can survive this game without him. I choose to believe that. I think Matt Milano is going to have to be, you know, head on a swivel, looking for the tight, you know, looking for Jonnu Smith and looking for these guys underneath. I think that's where their coverage is going to get really tested is from the safeties and the tight ends, you know, from having to cover the tight end spots, because that's always the safety valve for them. It's, you know, whereas, you know, the pass where you'd have like a Julian Edelman just kind of sit underneath and then he catch the ball and run for another 15 yards. They don't really have that now. But now it's like finding Jonnu Smith somewhere down the middle of the field, or, you know, flying out into the, out towards the sidelines or whatnot. That's where I worry about it. I don't worry about these receivers running wild everywhere. And honestly, I haven't seen enough of Jones's arm to know any better, but I don't really worry about a vertical game there so much. I'm not sweating that out very much. I'm more worried about how the defense responds to the run, and then how the defense responds to the play action game after that. That's where my concerns come in for Buffalo, because we saw Tennessee work that to perfection against them. Now, granted, worrying about Derrick Henry and worrying about, you know, New England's army of running backs is two different things, because Henry can break a game on you completely. And he did, you know, he did that game. But the defense has to be a lot more savvy in how they read these things, because, man, I keep going back to it. Every play action Tannehill ran in that game, I watched the Bills linebackers all took a step forward, or they lurched forward like, oh, here he comes. Oh, shit. Nope. Here we go. And then you got, you know, A.J. Brown leaking out behind you. And then suddenly they got 15 yards of play just because the linebackers all lurched forward or bit on it to stop the run. So I want to see that be more disciplined out of Buffalo's D. But, you know, I mean, again, Trey White's their best defensive player, hands down. But as far as like needing him to lock down a receiver this week, you don't need it. You need him against teams like Kansas City. You need him against, I'm blanking out here.
If you're playing the tight ends and like AJ Brown is, and if he's healthy, he's the kind of receiver that could kill you. Maybe if you're playing a team like the Bengals who have really good receivers, I get where you're going with that. And I completely agree. I'm gonna give you know what, Joe, I'm gonna give you a take here. And I'm pretty good with hunches, and I'm also not a homer, and you're not even a Bills fan. So, right. I mean, and I like that. That's, again, I've told you this many, many times. It's one of the reasons why I like talking Bills with you, because I know I'm going to get an objective answer from you, not necessarily what fans always want to hear. But here's the deal. I feel really good about this game if I'm the Bills. I do. I can explain it, and I'm going to right now. I think the Bills have more firepower than the Patriots. And I think, I mean, New England's played good offenses too this year, but this is prime time. There's a lot at stake. I think the Bills defense, even without Trey White, is very good. I think they're very capable of keeping the Patriots into somewhere between the teens to maybe the low 20s. And I know the Bills, and don't get me wrong, New England's got a very good defense and they're very well coached. But I think the Bills offense just has enough firepower that if they're playing well, and I've said this a couple times this year, I can't tell you how much emphasis I put on an offensive line when it comes to a football team. Mm-hmm. And the Bills' offensive line without Spencer Brown is a fucking mess, because Darrell Williams is going to tackle, and he's not good at tackle anymore. And then the right guard, whoever's coming in for him, which has been Cody Ford, is a disaster. So that's literally 40% of your line, or one half of your offensive line, that's just bad. John Feliciano, I am not a big fan of, but I do think he's better than Ike Boettger. So I think with that offensive line, and even if worst case Feliciano's not ready and Boettger's still playing guard, I think they'll be okay there. But with Spencer Brown at tackle and Williams at guard, this offensive line is significantly better. I think they'll block well enough. I think they can run the football well enough. Not great, but well enough. I think they finally realize that Matt Breida can be an asset to this offense. I think he helps a little bit. Dawson Knox is emerging into a very good tight end. So it's not just Stephon Diggs, although they need to go to Stephon Diggs. Well, the numbers say they're pretty much on par with last year, but I still feel like there's times where they forget about him a little bit. But anyway, my point is this. The Bills have more firepower than the Patriots. They're at home. It's Monday night. It's a big game. I got this gut feeling that the Bills are actually going to kick their ass. Win by double digits.
That's okay. That I was not expecting you to take that kind of turn with it. Like I understand having confidence in this, like, cause you should, the Bills offense should have that kind of confidence behind it.
They're battle tested now as opposed to a year ago. I think that matters too.
Yeah. And you know, you mentioned Diggs and I said this weeks ago, like, you know, the games that they struggle were games where like Allen couldn't figure out where Diggs was on the field. And then, you know, the last couple of weeks, it's like, oh, wow, hey, look, it's Stephon Diggs. Like, boy, that opens up the offense. Like,
I agree with you 50% on that. You're 100% right about Diggs. But I think they struggle half because of Diggs. Not so much that he's not getting the targets and the catches is where he's getting these little three-yard hitch passes as opposed to being worked down the middle, down the field more. Mm-hmm. But I still think it's the offensive line more than anything. I think the games they've struggled the most in is when the offensive line has been the worst. That Jacksonville game should never have happened. You know, the Pittsburgh game in the beginning of the year where Spencer Brown wasn't in the lineup, then he was just, you know, a rookie who hadn't played yet. The games they've looked the worst, the offensive line has been absolutely fucking horrific. Except the Colts game where they just got beat up. Man, 1-53. They just got beat up. Spencer Brown wouldn't help them that day. That wouldn't have mattered. But besides that, they've struggled the most when the offensive line has been shitty.
Yeah. I've been hanging up on the point that if you're relying on a third round rookie to anchor your line, you're in a bad spot. Like that's been my point all along. And that's why I fist pumped when Tim Graham wrote that a few weeks ago, where, you know, if you're hanging your hopes on a guy that you drafted in the third round last year, you got other problems that you're painting over with that.
It's like, true. That's
where I get stuck on that. That's where, you know, I mean, yes, getting all these guys back in line is huge. Like that's a huge help, but is, you know, the way the Patriots D up, is that going to be good enough? Is that, you know, that to me, the test of the line is the biggest thing here where, you know, can they hang with these kinds of teams? Like they couldn't hang with the Colts and I know no Brown, like whatever, fine. But like New England's D plays that kind of physical stuff on the line. Like if the Bills line can't handle that, then that's your problem. Like that's when you need like an ass kicker lineman out there to kind of, you know, light a fire under these guys and just be like, hey, like, let's quit getting pushed around here. Like this is crap. We should be owning these guys. And maybe Brown's that kind of player, and maybe they need that from more guys, but I don't know. There's a point where they've been tested by these by teams that really hammer around on the lines, and they've failed those tests each time. Like the Pittsburgh, Jacksonville, Colts, like these teams have lines that just absolutely come out and try to clobber you, and they've failed those tests. You know, other teams where it's, you know, it's more passive blocking and, you know, zone blocking type stuff, like Kansas City, you know, like they've passed those tests because that's essentially how the Bills like to play it. So it's like playing, it's like getting another practice in against, you know, except you're playing an opponent. In this case, you know, if the Patriots come out and start hitting them in the mouth, Bill's got to punch back. And if they don't, if they keep getting pushed back, then I'd be worried.
I agree. That's a very fair point. I liked what Tyler Dunn wrote a couple weeks ago. He basically said the Bills are front runners. If they're better than you, they get out, they get out in front, they'll dance on your grave, you know, but if they get hit with that uppercut, they don't know how to respond. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's going to be easy. I've been very high on the Patriots now for, again, I'm not just jumping on this Patriots bandwagon now. I've been seeing it for a while. I think they're good. And their defense has been really good. 13-0, 7-6, 24-13. That's the amount of points they've allowed per game over the last six games. So six games, they've yet to allow 25 points in their last 6 weeks. Not going to be easy. Just a gut feeling, man. Sometimes you just get that gut feeling. I think the Bills are going to play, maybe they're going to play their best game of the year offensively. And it could certainly going to come at a good time because the Bills need to win this game for the record. I mean,
yes.
I think they need to win this game.
Yes.
If they, first of all, when it comes to the division, maybe even the playoffs, bro, the way things are going in the crazy ass AFC, if the Bills lose this game on Monday night at home to the Patriots, now they're a game and a half behind the Patriots. Then they go to Tampa on the road the next week. You want to talk about a week where maybe not having Trey White's going to hurt you? How about Mike Evans and Chris Godwin being the two wide receivers for Tampa with Tom Brady throwing them the ball? That's got potential for disaster. And then also on the schedule, the Bills have another game at New England this time. So this is a very, very big game. I'm not going to go as far to say it's must win. It's not a win or go home situation, but they're going to be in a lot of trouble if they lose this football game. Simple as that. I don't think they're going to, but I think they're in trouble if they do.
Yeah, I've had a handful of Bills fans tell me that, like, if they lose this game, they're just like, oh, it's all right. You know, the rest of the schedule is kind of easy. And it's like, well, you have two other really hard games.
Sure.
At least two other really hard games after this. And it involves, you know, New England again and then Tampa Bay. And they're like, oh, well, you know, they got Carolina. They got the Jets again. They, things are okay. Like, they'll be fine. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I wouldn't want to go losing, like, lose one or even two to New England. You can't do that because then you're definitely not winning the division. You want to beat Tampa Bay because, you know, again, it's getting one over on Brady, because Brady has a Chipper Jones against the Mets kind of lock on the Bills for some reason. For a lot of reasons, but like, you know, even now it's like, geez, how's this guy still in everybody's head here? Like that's goofy, but you don't want to be in that spot where it's like, okay, well, you know, if we can't win the division, don't worry, we got the playoffs. Like, I don't know, do you? You know, like, I mean, everybody's sketchy and they're like, well, I don't see any reason why they would lose to any of these teams. I go, well, the Jacksonville games, why? Like, that, you can't get critical on, you know, saying like, oh, they got these other teams on lockdown, don't worry about it. It's like, well, you thought you were going to beat Jacksonville by 60. So, you know, I don't know. You can't get complacent. And like, that's, I don't want to say that's kind of what Ty Dunn was getting at about this, where it's complacency. I think it's undue arrogance at times where it's just kind of, don't worry, we'll walk these guys. It's fine.
Yeah, that's exactly what
it is. What makes you think you're going to do that? Like, you haven't proven that at all. Like, wow, we'll beat Kansas City. We're going to own this. We're going to own the AFC. Like, cool. You beat Kansas City when they were still figuring their shit out. And now they have. Do you want Kansas City again? Like, I don't know. If I'm making the playoffs, I want to try to get as far away from Kansas City side of the bracket as humanly possible. Because, you know, once they round into form, we know what they're like. And we're already seeing what they're like. And people just, you know, Mahomes doesn't still look that great. It's like, I don't know, man. A lot of what I've seen the last couple of weeks looks like him rounding into form, and I'm seeing the old Mahomes come back. Like, that's the thing. Like, oh, suddenly Travis Kelce's catching those balls underneath. Suddenly Tyreek Hill's getting wild all over the field. Like, you know, the other 100 receivers they have are all catching passes everywhere. It's like, I don't know, man. They don't, like, they're like, Kansas City's like the old Patriots. They don't start really taking shit seriously until like week 10 because they're just like, whatever. Well, we can go 500, this whole way, win, you know, rally and just run the table the rest of the way. And then, you know, people are just gonna be like, well, I can't believe how bad they were at the beginning of the year. Like, yeah, well, you know, you make the Super Bowl 2 years in a row, you're gonna have a little bit of a hangover, I guess.
Yeah. Last point here, and because I want to draft, I'll say this about the standings. Okay. Yeah. I'm not talking about mathematically the Bills can finish in first in the conference or they can miss the playoffs. Of course, that can happen mathematically. There's still like five or six goddamn games left, of course. But realistically, bro, as of right now, going into this weekend, they are the sixth seed in the AFC. They beat New England. They're right back up into the top two or three because they'll be leading the division, all right? But if they lose this game, they might not, if the season had ended on Tuesday morning, it's a chance they wouldn't even be in the playoffs. What I'm saying is this. The AFC is crazy this year. No team is taking control, and there's got to be, what, like 11, 12 teams right now that are realistically vying for playoff spots. I mean, you got the Vegas, you got Denver, 6-5. They're only a game behind the Bills. You got Indy, who's a game and a half behind the Bills. Actually, they're, a game and a half. And they beat the Bills head-to-head. The Steelers are still in the mix. They beat the Bills head-to-head. Point being is, it's not a given the Bills are going to be in the playoffs. It's also not a given they're still in play for the number one seed. That's how crazy it is right now with the AFC. And I'm not saying mathematically. I'm talking about realistically. The Bills can end up having a bye their first week, or the Bills can end up having 26 weeks of buys because they're not even going to be playing in the playoffs. And this is a big game. The Bills have been really good the last couple of years in the division. And again, I do think the Bills are going to win. It's a big game, and I don't think it's being undersold. Sometimes there's a big game, and maybe it's not quite as big as we talk about. This is not one of them. So, big game. I look forward to talking about it next week with you. Let's wrap up here. Christmas songs or draft. Actually, let's go back to last week. You know what? Last week sucked. All right. I'm not talking about
results. I forget what our poll even was, what our top five was.
That's what I'm talking about. Last week was a holiday week, Thanksgiving. Let's be honest here. It was kind of a throwaway poll, and I don't know. We mailed it in, essentially. What we did to refresh your memory was female vocalists over the last 40 years. And I don't even know if you know this, but you did win.
Oh,
you had,
cool.
You won.
Let me have a parade. Hang on.
You won with 54% of the vote. You had, okay, to recap. So you drafted Whitney Houston, first overall, Mariah Carey, Amy Winehouse, Annie Lennox, Chrissy Hyde. By the way, this was the wrong week to do this. Anything would have been, the interaction would not have been strong on Thanksgiving, I don't think, no matter what we did, just because it's Thanksgiving and people aren't on Twitter as much and, you know, listening to podcasts and stuff like that as much that week. But that's a really good roster you had. I had 46% of the vote. I took Celine Dion. I took Adele, Lady Gaga, Alicia Keys, Ann Wilson. I feel good about my roster, too. Only a couple. I don't have the numbers in front of me. It was only about 350, 400 votes. Low turnout. Again, holiday week. It was kind of a throwaway poll, but you did win. One of these weeks, I'm actually going to have to go back and go through all the polls and start keeping track of our record. I don't want to know. I probably shouldn't do that because I shouldn't want to know what it is. But yeah, man, another W in the column for Yurden. I get made fun of a lot, by the way, for this shit now, just so you know that.
Really? Making fun of you?
People on Twitter constantly, or even Facebook, you know, or friends of mine, even sometimes when I'm drinking, I get razzed about getting my ass kicked in these polls. They tell me how bad I am.
Wait, are they razzing me because they think my picks stink? And then they're like, wow, but yours really stink.
No, well, I don't know. They tell me that I suck.
that's tough.
Again, this is December and it's Christmas month here at Talk Buffalo Podcast. So we're going to have some form, at least some connection to Christmas all month long. And this month, or this week, I should say, we're doing Christmas songs. All right. Now, yeah, you went first because you took Whitney and I was mad about that. Yeah, I didn't think you were going to, I don't know why.
Scouted, man. Like, I know you love Whitney and I'm like, how was I not going to pick her first? Come on.
All right.
And that wasn't like just the defensive pick. That's a legit number one pick.
Come on, man. That was a really good pick. It was. I don't know.
It just happened to screw you over. So
I don't know why I got rattled. I got a little rattled because I don't know why I didn't think you wouldn't pick Whitney.
Wow.
But you did. All right. Man. Well, let's see what happens this week. All right. So when I say Christmas songs too, by the way, there's so many songs. We're just going to draft the song and not necessarily specifically the artist. I mean, you could add the artist if it's a song. There are some songs out there, and we'll see if we come across this during our draft where
I was preparing for this like we needed to have the artist to go with it, too.
Naming the artist, that's fine.
Okay.
I'm going to name you the artist for ones I take, too. But there are some you might make an argument. There's some, like, I don't know, we'll cross that bridge if we get to it.
Okay.
You don't necessarily have to have the singer's name because some have been covered dozens of times. Mm-hmm. I say that because I do have the first pick. And I am drafting a song and it's been done countless times and there's countless good versions of it, but I am going to give you the specific. You know what? I went down with her with my first pick last week and I'm going to possibly go down with her again with my first pick this week because I'm taking Oh Holy Night. That's my first overall pick.
Wow.
And I'm taking the Celine Dion version. It's just gold, dude.
Picking Celine's never a bad move. I mean, she gets dumped on for the Titanic song, but that ain't her fault, man.
Dude, she's one of the best singers on this earth. And
again,
I love this song, no matter who's singing it, but her version of it to me is just unbelievable.
I'm kind of annoyed at you right now because I had Oh Holy Night on my list just in general. Really? Because it's a song that goes hard. It's a Christmas song that goes hard that has there's no reason why that song should go as hard as it does, which sounds weird for a Christmas song. I know. It's not like it's Slayer playing Oh Holy Night. Like it's not like that at all. But it's like, you know you're in Christmas when that song hits. Sometimes you're just like, oh shit, it's Christmas now. Like, okay.
Yep. Love it.
All right. And like, just in general, I was picking that song. I had it written on my list without an artist. Like everything else I have on my list, I have the artist next to it.
That's one of the reasons why I said that. And there's one or two other ones that could be in play where there's just so many artists and so many versions of it that I don't know, you know, but anyway, all right, let's see what you got, man.
So this whole thing gets me torn because part of me wants to do ones that are like really original, like, you know, like Christmas songs that are like, they are Christmas songs, but they're not like the standards, you know? But then there are other songs where it's like the standard is the standard for a reason.
Right.
And one of those to me, I'm going to try to keep this balance for me. I'm going to try to do some balance shit here. When I think Christmas, I immediately think of Bing Crosby because he's done 1,000 different Christmas songs. So that you got to pick, if you got to pick one from the bunch, to me, it's White Christmas by Bing Crosby. Because that is, I mean, again, legendary crooner, just an unreal voice. And he's basically the voice of Christmas as far as I'm concerned. I'm glad you had that. I'm glad you
it
had that on
the queued up because it was very fucking high on my list, you son of a bitch.
Good. Take that. But yeah, it's, you can't go wrong with anything by Bing Crosby. Honestly, this whole list could be Bing Crosby as far as I'm concerned.
It definitely could, no question.
It's again, like you throw that on and you're just like, you're in a mood. Like, you know, the candles are lit around the house, the tree's lit up, you know, it smells like cookies or, you know, the turkey's cooking or whatever it is. And you're just like, okay, we're at Christmas now. Like, this is good. Like it's like getting incense, but in a song, you know, you're just kind of like, I'm okay. All right. I'm good now. My second pick here is going to be, I'm torn because, there's just so many good ones. And
This is going to be harder than we thought, I think.
Yeah, because I think we get torn between, again, standards and, you know, more modernized or different types of Christmas songs.
Sure.
I mentioned this song like weeks ago. It's the song that signals the beginning of Christmas season. It's All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah. I mean, listen, that somebody mentions that song like around Thanksgiving and I'm just like, oh shit, it's in my head forever now. It's never gonna leave my head. And it's playing in every store, it's playing in every commercial, like everywhere. It's the most modern of like the, it's a standard now as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And like it was made like what, 15, 20 years ago, whatever it was. Like, holy shit, man. Like, that's crazy to show up and make a Christmas song that's like a new, like, guarantee play Christmas song. Like, now is nuts. Because, again, everything's like standards constantly. But, like, that's like a standard now. Like, I mean, you're not going to hear it on, like, AM stations, you know, randomly. Like, that's just not going to happen. But, like, if you did, would you be surprised? No, not at all.
I hate myself for how much I love that song. And I'm not even going to lie, man. I really do. I'm shocked. I'm not shocked that you took White Christmas. I don't know where you would take it, but that was high on my list. And I did not think you were going to go Mariah Carey. I'm a little bit taken back here. I thought I might be able to sneak that in with a third.
Yeah, I thought I was going back to the well again, because I know I mentioned it. Oh, geez. I think I mentioned it on here like a few weeks ago and I was like, shit, Pat's going to remember that. And honestly, if you'd taken it first, justified. 100% justified.
Yeah.
I felt guilty because I was like, oh, man, I feel like I'm going back to like going back into the same hat and just doing the same thing over again. But like, you can't not pick it. Like if neither of us picks it, like in our first couple picks, we're idiots.
It's a very hot topic song too, by the way. The people who love it will defend it to the face of this earth. And then there's some traditionalists and people who hate it and they'll bash it at every turn. But yeah,
man, how can you hate that song, man? Like I'm a hard ass. Like I love Christmas, but also just, I'm kind of like, all right, enough. But like that song, I'm immediately like, I'm happy. Like things are cool. Like, yeah, I mean, it gets overplayed like crazy, but who cares? Like who gives a shit? Like it's nice. It's a good song. It's a great song.
All right. Well, I got two coming up here now. The first one, you know what? It's by Bobby Helms. It's an old song. It's a traditional standard, and it's Jingle Bell Rock. I've always loved that song. It reminds, by the way, these kind of songs, I feel like they have some kind of meaning in some ways, like there, or they'll spark some type of memory. Mm-hmm. At least for me, they do. Like this song takes me back to being a kid, and it was one of my dad's favorite songs. And I remember mm-hmm. Christmas time, he'd be pumping this on his shitty radio. In fact, I think he had it like on his like cassette mixtape. You know, he'd play it and rewind it mm-hmm. all the time. But yeah, man, this is a classic for me. So this one wasn't too hard. This is where I'm taking I'm not taking a risk with the song. I'm taking mm-hmm. a risk here by not picking. I'm trying to get something later in the draft.
Okay.
So okay. I'm taking a chance here. I don't know if I might have been able to get in the 15th round if we had 15 rounds. I honestly have no idea. So for everyone listening, Joe and I have no idea where we're going with any of these. But for now, I'm going to let it try to decide for another round. This is another standard by Brenda Lee, Rocking Around the Christmas Tree.
You prick.
I love this song.
You prick.
Yeah. I know other people have said this. I'm not the first one. Here it is. All right, you hear that?
Yeah.
I always grew up thinking it said, later we'll have some fucking pie, not pumpkin pie. Maybe that's what made me like it first. And I've heard a lot of people on Twitter, you know, social media talking about that. But this is a great song, man.
It is.
Just a feel-good song, man.
So, I'm so mad at you right now because I was getting ready to say this song. Because I assume you're going to go with something else. I don't know why. But as soon as you said Bobby Helms with Jingle Bell Rock, I was like, oh, shit, maybe this is the path he's going down with stuff that's like from, what, like the 50s-ish?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like the 50s. So I was just like, oh, no, maybe he's gonna do it to me. And sure enough, he did, you prick.
All right, well, you got two here, man.
Stuffing coal in my stocking with these picks, man. Just fuck. You know, okay, I got to pick Holly Jolly Christmas by Burl Ives. And I mean, this is like ancient song stuff by now. Like Burl Ives, what, the 30s, 40s, I guess. And he looked like Santa Claus. Everything about him like looks like Christmas. And apparently he was like the crustiest man on the face of the earth. He like hated kids. He hated Christmas, but it's a perfect Christmas song, man. Like
it's a great
song. Again, it puts you right in the mindset of like, yes, Christmas, good.
Couldn't agree more, man. Couldn't agree. Good song. I like that pick.
So yeah, and like Burl Ives, his voice is great. Like that's such great voice. And again, he looks like Santa Claus. Like he looks exactly, like he's got the white beard, the whole deal. Like just, he is Santa. So yeah, I have to pick that one. I have to, especially because I had to pick an older song than you. So, you know, that's the way that goes. But I'd be remiss if I did not pick The Christmas Song by Nat King Cole.
Okay, that's another good one. I don't think we're going to have any bad ones here, man.
No,
I really don't.
I really don't think so. But like, Nat King Cole's voice is just like, oh man. Yeah. Like you're just like, yep, okay, we're good here. And see, now I just want to listen to it.
I don't even want to do this podcast anymore.
Right, I just want to
listen to these songs in their entirety and crack a beer and fucking look at Christmas lights and stuff for all night, man.
I don't even like eggnog, and I'll drink one right now. put enough rum in it to make it okay for me. That's all.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I mean, Jesus.
This is a standard. This is a great standard.
100% a standard, and it's perfect. It's a perfect song.
Yeah, it really is.
This is a sit by the fire and enjoy song.
Absolutely. Like
it's the song that puts you in a place right away makes it a great song. Like that's kind of what I draw up with these, because each song, I mean, hell, every song that we've all picked here, I can put myself in a place of being like, yep, I'm right there. Of course, you know, Mariah Carey song, I picture I'm in a mall, you know, being chased, you know, trying to chase after things, looking like Arnold Schwarzenegger in that movie. But like every song I can pick out, like where it comes from, why I know it from there. And it puts me in a certain place where it's like, yep, I'm good. Like,
absolutely. That's what I'm saying. These songs, they either spark memories or they make you feel a certain kind of way. And that's what I love about them. So I got my last two. All right. I did get away with the one I was trying to hide. I have no idea how it's going to play, but it's like the only Christmas rap song ever. It's by Run DMC, Christmas in Hollis, man.
Yes.
I'll never forget when I first heard this before. Because again, if you grew up listening to the standards around your house, your parents, your family's putting them around or whatever, you know them. And then all of a sudden, in somewhere in time in the, I think it was the 80s or whatever, I hear this. I'm like, what the fuck? Dude's rapping. Run DMC's rapping. And plus, by the way, Run DMC was like my favorite rap group ever growing up, too. And they still are one of my favorite rap groups ever. So, yeah, I'm glad I got this one. I don't know how it's going to play out, but if I go down with this one, I'm all right going down with it. So.
I think anybody who hates on this song just hates fun. And
yeah, they
like,
hate fun.
I just get lost. If you're just like, I don't like that song, get out of here. Just take your crap and take your coal and get the hell out of here, pal.
I'm going to pick a controversial song with my last one, too. Well, it's not. I'll tell you why. Only reason why it's controversial. Do you know that? I know you don't know them personally, but you've heard of the Rock Pile Report. Good guys on Twitter. Yeah. They have a podcast. They put out this thing called Whamageddon. They shared this thing where if you hear this song, you're out, you're eliminated, or you got to try to avoid it all month. I don't want to avoid it because it's my fifth pick here, and it's Last Christmas by Wham.
I love this song, but this man, it's depressing.
It might be my downfall. It is a depressing song. I agree 100%. But to me, when I think of Christmas, this is one of the first songs that I think of, good and bad. And again, it's kind of, it's modern enough.
Yeah.
You know, again, compared to all
it's like an 80s song now.
Yeah, compared to shit like, you know, White Christmas and Holy Night and Jingle Bell Rock and stuff like that. I'm immediately having buyer's remorse. I haven't even written it down yet. And I already have buyer's remorse for picking that.
They shouldn't, though.
Oh,
no,
God.
Come on.
All right. Well, fuck.
Of course, it all depends on what I pick last here. So I might be able to bury you. So,
all right. Yeah. Speaking of, you got one more here. So
now I think when we get to our honorable mentions, we're going to have an unbelievable list of honorable mentions. But I don't know if I'm going like too old school with this, but like It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year by Andy Williams.
That's a great song, man.
I mean,
get my ass kicked.
I feel like Nelson on The Simpsons, where they wound up stopping in Branson to make sure to see Andy Williams, and Bart goes, "Oh, Andy Williams." He's like, "Say another bad thing," but like gets ready to pound Bart because they're gonna go see Andy Williams.
Yeah,
I mean, Jesus Christ, man! Like this song, it's such a good Christmas song. You hear it when it's not during Christmas. It's the song that gets attached more to like kids going back to school than anything now, which is nuts. But like, I mean, the whole song's Christmas. Like, it's, you know, it's perfect. But yeah, like, it's hard not pick to it's hard to not pick a song like that just because. Yeah,
I have buyer's remorse, Joe. Can I change my pick? We've never done this on this podcast before. In the history of our draft, and we got it, man, we've probably done 25 of these at this point. Neither of us have ever changed the pick. I'm not going, I want to so bad. I want to change the pick.
What would you swap out? Like, we'll tease the idea. I'm not going to allow you to do it, but I just want to know what you, I just want to know what you do.
It would be a classic. I would go back to a classic, and it's funny you said Andy Williams, because he's actually very high on my list, but not for that song. Although that's a fucking perfect song, but it's I'll be Home for Christmas by Andy Williams.
Oh yeah.
And it's the Andy, and it's the Andy Williams version specifically. This was one of those songs where I was talking about, man. There's so many great versions, but I love I'll Be Home for Christmas. If only for one night. It's a great song.
Is that another one Bing Crosby did?
Bing Crosby's done it. Everybody's done it.
Okay.
I personally like this Andy Williams version right now, but yeah, I'm gonna regret it. But you're a prick for not letting me change it. I'm gonna get killed for last.
Why would I? Why would I let you change it? You made your bed, you sleep in it, pal.
Let me give you a couple that I had on my list that neither of us ended up drafting.
Okay.
This one, obviously. Winter Wonderland. That's a pretty popular one. If you want to go new, Underneath the Christmas Tree by Kelly Clarkson, which is actually a really pretty cool song.
I don't even know that one. Yes. You could have picked that one, and I would have been like, no idea. I wouldn't even know if it was good or bad. I'd just been like, okay, cool. It's a song.
there's so many great ones. What are, you know, oh, by the way, hold on. There was one I struggled between. I didn't almost pick, I didn't almost pick that one. The one I was going back and forth with was Feliz Navidad. I almost took Feliz Navidad instead of I want to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
I almost took that one.
Did that? Was that Johnny Mathis?
No, it was oh god damn it. I have it in front of me too, because again, it was on my list. It was
oh frick. That's gonna bug me.
I don't know.
I need to look it up now.
I'm gonna have to let you know. But anyway, I took that, so I gotta make sure I include that.
Jose Feliciano.
Yeah. Yeah. Almost took that. Yeah.
Yes. I wonder if our pal Joe from Queens is gonna get mad that we didn't pick Dominic the Donkey.
Yeah. I fucking hate that song. I would have been so mad at you. I would have been so insanely mad at you if you would have taken
it. If I was doing troll picks, that would have been number one on the list. Where maybe I was like, how can I make Pat the maddest?
Maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised that I won't get roasted for the Wham pick. But another new one I could have taken was NSYNC. I don't know if you know this song. I love this song. It's by NSYNC. Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays.
You would have gotten killed for this.
Probably.
You would have gotten slaughtered for this. You kidding me?
I don't know, man.
See, because the other ones I had on my list, the ones I didn't take, Little Saint Nick by the Beach Boys.
Yeah, it's a good one. That was one of my dad's favorites.
Yeah. My dad loved the Beach Boys too. And I mean, we weren't a big Christmas song household. Like, that just wasn't our thing. But like the Beach, my dad loved the Beach Boys. And then Run Rudolph Run by Chuck Berry.
Oh, that's a good one too. God, there's so many good Christmas songs.
I got in such a Chuck Berry thing from watching the Beatles. Like, to kind of put a bow on like our talk from like an hour ago, but like they were doing so many like dicking around playing Chuck Berry songs. And I was like, the Beatles were into Chuck Berry. I was like, that's cool as hell. And then I was going over it. I was like, wait, Chuck Berry's got a great Christmas song, because I think isn't it in Home Alone? It's probably in a handful of movies anyways, but like, that's a great Christmas song. And it's just Chuck Berry being, you know, weird, but also really cool.
One last one. Do you remember? This was from the 80s by Band-Aid. It was one of those collaborations.
Oh, I know. I already know where you're going. Yeah.
You remember this one?
Mm-hmm.
That one could have been a good pick too. I don't know what the reaction. I'll tell you what. Doing this was fun. A lot more fun than I thought it was going to be. I have no idea, no earthly idea whatsoever how it's going to play out. Let me recap real quick here before we get out of here. So I drafted Oh Holy Night, Jingle Bell Rock, Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree, Christmas in Hollis, and Last Christmas. Joe selected White Christmas, All I Want for Christmas, A Holly Jolly Christmas, The Christmas Song. God, there's a lot of Christmases going on here. And It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year. I might have to do, when we do our weekly Twitter poll, I might have to have like one for each and then a poll on the third. It might have to be a thread, because these are going to be... knows a lot. And we'll put the artist. I'll put the artist too. Again, so I'll have one tweet for you, one tweet for me, and then a poll on the third. Have fun though. I enjoyed this, man. This was fun. This was really cool. Good episode as always. Make sure you follow Joe on Twitter at Joe Yurden. Check out Noted Hockey, his Substack. Subscribe to it. Bro, this was fun, man. See how it plays out. And I'm looking forward to next week too, because again, we got the Bills Patriots to talk about, and I want to see how Casey Mittelstadt looks, and we'll talk about that as well.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And you know what? I'm actually now in a Christmas mood. So thanks. I was not feeling Christmas at all, but now I am. So this worked out good. Maybe now I'll buy gifts. I don't know. We'll see.